This week's episode of Still Untitled is brought to you by Stitcher Premium. Stitcher Premium gets you completely ad-free episodes of hundreds of shows like Comedy Bang Bang, WTF with Marc Maron, and How Did This Get Made? You also get 21,000 hours of exclusive content, and new exclusive originals like Marvel's Wolverine are launching every week for Stitcher Premium members. If you love podcasts, you gotta check it out. When you listen to ad-free episodes in Stitcher Premium, your favorite podcasters also get paid. Help support your favorite shows and join Stitcher Premium today. For a free month of listening, go to stitcherpremium.com and use the promo code Untitled. And now on with the show.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Sound Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm. Thank you, Will.
You said I was blowing up so understated, I barely knew you were there.
It was too hot. Bringing it down.
Guys, gotta run for shelter, gotta run for shade.
It was Maker Faire this weekend.
It was. What a magical and lovely place.
It's the very best.
Yeah. And Maker Faire had a couple of additions this year that it hasn't had before. One was at props and a prop contest.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The 501st was in strong display, mm-hmm. And a whole bunch of cosplay was going on officially. I mean, people have worn costumes to all the Maker Faires.
I saw the Mandalorians
as
well, which I hadn't seen at a con in ages, so that was cool.
I rode in one of their land speeders,
yes.
A Vallejo contingent that has an annual Vallejo parade. These guys were awesome. The two things about land speeders that are a genuine ass kicker are the bubble windshield,
yeah, mm-hmm.
and the engine nacelles, the three engines.
Really? Why are the engine nacelles
hard? They're a pain in the butt to model, right? Okay. Everything else you could kind of do with plywood, but those you can't quite. The Vallejo Mercs came up with this. I don't know if it was the Vallejo Mercs, but the guy driving it came up with a great solution for both. The bubble window was a skylight he cut up.
Oh, man, that's super smart.
I know. And the engines were old conga drums. They were the perfect fit.
They're long.
Uh-huh.
And
they're fatter at the front than they are at the end. And they cut them up and put some details on the sides. And they were...
Was this the gray
that's
one?
That's industrious.
The gray one.
It's kind of grayish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw that one. I was blown away.
Yeah, it was a golf cart.
My daughter was unimpressed.
Wow. We both had land speeder adventures.
You had some,
yeah.
too?
Yeah. One of the people we met, a guy named Adam Woodworth, who makes foam Star Wars quadcopters. So he works for Google also.
Did he do the Tyridium shuttle that I saw recently?
The Imperial shuttle? Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So he said that one. So the Imperial shuttle, that not only does it fly, but also the wings go
what?
Up and down.
Yeah. No, it's so
and good. It's
and
really like foam.
And because you can't see the rotors that are basically at the four corners of it, it's uncanny.
And he said that thing outdoors sucks because all the
light foam. Oh, it's
sure. Yeah. But because he was flying it indoors at Maker Faire in their cage, it was perfect. Perfect. And he's done a Slave One, which flies upright. He's done an Imperial droid, which goes, and he's done an X-Wing that goes a VTOL.
Oh, he does an Imperial droid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But for the land speeder, what he did was he took the radio flyer. The radio flyer mm-hmm. has a kid's land speeder that you can get for like $200. Toys R Us going out of business has it for like $150. And he took the shell of that, and it fit perfectly over a Razor. Remember Razor had those little scooters?
Yeah.
Razor makes a go-kart called the Crazy Cart
is
a three-wheeled vehicle and fits like an adult. And the land speeder almost fits perfectly around that. And what it has is accelerator, no brakes, but has a
reverse.
A drifter.
Well, you can release the transmission?
You lift up the back wheels and then you start drifting.
Wow.
So it's a drifting land speeder.
Wow.
And a full-grown adult like me in that.
Did you drive it?
Yes.
Was it good?
It was awesome.
Oh, man. This sounds... Do you have footage?
I have footage.
It'll go up?
There's a video on the site right now
awesome.
About it. And we can build one. The Razor thing is like $250.
Well, we got to build one.
And yeah, and it's just taking apart the land speeder, putting it on top, and doing some minor tweaks.
I think instead of building one, I think you should build two.
You're totally right.
Because why build one when you can buy two for twice the price?
What could be more fun than one?
Yeah,
two.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You can take them out to the polo field and go around the track, see who wins.
Oh.
Hopefully not get any injuries.
The Maker Faire, I keep wanting to say Comic-Con, because they feel quite similar in a in a love of what we're doing fan aspect. Like everyone there is there to play.
Yeah.
And that's something that I find really invigorating about moving around through Maker Faire and engaging with the fans.
Well, it's such a big area. And I know New York is even bigger, but there's so many different independent sections. You could go, and a lot of people do go just to wander and dip into one section, dip into another section. And it's great because you get really inspired. For us, you get super inspired by people who are obsessed about the one thing, whether it's like crocheting or model trains. Or if you're there and you can meet your fellow people who are interested in those things, and you could stay in that one spot the whole time and get a full weekend's worth of experience
Yeah, I was there with my daughter mostly, so we were exploring and doing, like, just kind of going where she wanted to go and looking at what she wanted to see. And
hey,
like,
bubbles.
Yeah. Man, let me tell you, the guys making those helium foam bubbles, I don't know if
those. No, one of them came by me and like said hello.
So I listened to him talk about how he designed that whole thing. I wasn't going to talk about this, but it's great. So they designed it so they wouldn't waste a ton of helium. So they wanted to make one bottle of helium last for 48 hours or something insane.
So they did a helium air mixture?
So they're doing a helium air mixture. It took them a long time to figure out how to do the helium air mixture without requiring like a gas infuser that's really expensive.
Sure. What, and did he use a Venturi?
I missed that part because I was chasing a 5-year-old. but the upshot was one tank of gas lasts a really long time. And the bubble mixture that they devised is very robust. So the bubbles hold their shape. So they had boxes that were maybe 3 feet by three feet or 2 feet by 2 feet that had a bubbler in the bottom that was making the bubbles form. And then that would force up the bubbles in a structure, in a matrix.
Yeah.
And then they had forms. Like, it was like a Play-Doh Fun Factory.
Wow.
So the forms at the top would shape them into stars or mushrooms or whatever.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they just cut them off. They were solid enough they could cut them off with a piece of PVC pipe. And then they just kind of float up and go where the wind took
them. That's magic.
Oh, and like,
no, I know one of them like moved by me and I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. It was. It looked like little bits of floating.
Yeah.
Like
neutrally buoyant.
It was incredible. Yeah. It was really, really cool.
That's exciting.
To Adam's point about this year having things like cosplay and prop making, I mean, full disclosure, Will and I are on the advisory board.
Yes.
And we have a good relationship with Make. Like, one of the things that in conversations with the people putting on the convention ahead of Maker Faire is letting them know that we'd love to see more of these things.
And different, like I went in and talked about virtual reality and mixed reality and stuff like that. We talked about, and then we ended up talking about board games. So they I don't think we made it in time. We had the conversation in time to get them in for this San Mateo, although there were some board game people there. But like designing board game, a board game is a designed object just like a car or a rocket or anything else.
And they that has a rabid and dedicated fandom and ecosystem. Yeah, totally.
Well, and in a way that like video games are more egalitarian now than they have been since the 80s or 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, you know, depending on the type of game you want, it's a big investment to make a game. A board game is something that you can take dice and paper and cards.
Yeah.
And you know, do your basic design for practically nothing.
Totally.
And just, you know, practice and figure out what your game is. Yeah. So yeah, it's good stuff.
Adam, on Sunday, you also were there to give your, now it's officially called the Sunday Sermon.
It is officially called that.
Brother Adam.
Brother
Adam. Preach to me.
I will tell you that I only found out, I've said this last year, that I only found out that it was called the Sunday Sermon a couple of years ago, that it had been informally called that long before I knew that that was what it was being referred to. And now, last year, I pushed towards that. This year, I also pushed towards that, but not, it wasn't like I was, no, that's not me. That's Norm.
Yeah, Norm did it. That Norm right there.
This year, I knew that I wanted to talk about sharing ideas and things and materials and processes. I knew I wanted to talk about sharing your toys. And that's the only thing I held in my brain. So this is sometimes how I do this. I just held that thought in my brain. And Sunday morning, I got up at 7 a.m. And in 90 minutes, I wrote that 14-minute piece that I spoke. And I was really surprised where it went. I said that on stage. I didn't realize it was going to go this philosophical, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really pleased with how it came out. And the response has been incredibly lovely.
Yeah, we're going to put the full audio of that after this podcast. But you said it went somewhere you didn't expect. Is it in form, like in structure, or just in theme? Like, what was it before it ended up being what it ended up being?
So I just started by talking about the different ways in which people haven't shared with me in the past and how I found that and the ways in which I find sharing, again, my stuff, my processes, my knowledge, my things, how I find that to be invigorating and self-perpetuating in terms of the energy it takes to make stuff and to be part of a community. But the probably the last couple of minutes, I just went straight towards the raw philosophy of why that's so important to me and why it's so important right now. And then I talked about being able to listen to other people's stories. I've talked a lot about telling our stories. And frankly, lately, I've been confronting the fact that there are many situations in which I don't listen enough. This has been something that I've known about and been dealing with my whole life. But I decided to talk about that on stage and not from a vantage point of I know this, so you should follow this. It's that we really need to listen to the stories of the people whose experience is radically different than ours. I was surprised when I wrote it how true this was. But I said, you know, shutting out the voices of others has never been a path to greatness. This is like, that is the, one of the most unassailable things I have ever written down of like, yep, nope, that checks out. I'm never, I could defend that with my life.
And I love that sharing defies the laws of physics.
Mm-hmm. The more you do, the more you get.
Yeah.
Fight entropy, man.
Yeah. but also like sharing and listening are the acts, but generosity, which is what you started with, is the motivation.
Well, and it's the side product. I mean, sitting there and listening to someone else's experience and watching and really engaging. I recently, a few weeks ago, I was at dinner with someone who was being a little bit of a blowhard, and I was watching them talk to me and I was thinking, wow, this is a little boring. But then I was thinking, how many people have I buttonholed from the other side of this exact equation? How many? Oh, my God, so many. I'm going to sit here and listen to this guy, and I'm going to ask him more questions about the thing he's talking about. Yeah. And I watched him just light up, and I was like, right, we all want to be seen and heard. And it's a great practice to listen, and I am not as good at it as I wish I was, and I seek to be better.
Yeah, I think that's all there to say about it. It's worth totally listening to the videos on the site. But again, if you're listening to the podcast, we're going to put that at the end of the podcast.
Cool.
Well.
Also, signed autographs for a couple of hours. Such great stories. People bring stuff to give me. They bring stuff to show me. A couple of young illustrators did drawings with beautiful. I mean, it's intense when some 13-year-old kid brings their sketchbook for me to sign and said, I started drawing because of watching your videos on Tested, and they're so much better at drawing than I will ever be. And that is like awesome.
But that's great. I mean, that's the thing that I love. I've said this before, I know, but the thing that I love about Maker Faire is walking around and looking at 5-year-olds who are tired of looking at robots. Because I'm like, oh, right. If there's a 5-year-old that's they've seen more robots in the first 5 minutes walking around Maker Faire than I saw until I was 20, probably.
Yeah. Sure.
And like the things that these kids we're already starting to see it. The kids, you know, a few years ago when we saw the kids that made the Battlestar Galactica simulator, they were like high school kids. They'd been coming to Maker Faire since they were 8. And when they were 15, they decided they wanted to build a 3-axis space sim, you know, like a flight trainer, cockpit flight trainer. we see stuff like it's like Open ROV. Those guys have been coming to Maker Faire since I've been coming to Maker Faire.
Yeah, yeah.
And they started out with a thing that was glued together plexiglass. And now they have like they have a underwater robot that goes fast enough that the pool that they've been bringing for 10 years isn't big enough to accelerate to full speed, and they can actually fight currents and rivers and stuff like that and take that thing to places they've never been able to go before.
Actually, some little girl at my autograph signing, she was like, I have made some robots. I was like, oh, have you made any robots recently? And she's like, nah, just an underwater one.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the things that these kids are exposed to shapes the way they view the world and like
and I think, what's possible.
Yeah, and what's possible for them to do. And my daughter walks away from this. She's 5. She walks away from this and she says, oh, I want to make everything. I want to do everything when I grow up. What do you want? Did you see anything you think you might want to do when you grow up? I want to do everything.
Everything. Yeah. You know what else I love about Maker Faire is how many of our awesome friends and colleagues come to town.
Oh, it's so good.
Right? Yeah, so Bill Duran was here for a few days. We got to hang out. He brought his wife. Laura Kampf, the incomparable Laura Kampf, was here. We actually shot a one-day build with
collaborate her. With both those people. Yep. Yeah, this week.
That'll go up on the site on last Thursday. Because a lot of people come from all over the country who are working hard to bring making and maker culture to the most marginalized communities that really need it. A couple of my fellow board members from Nation of Makers and I held an event for 40 people here in the cave that was just a long conversation with some of the old people from Obama's Office of Science and Technology Policy, some people I knew, many people that I didn't, a really, really fruitful conversation. And all of that and kind of engendered by the fact that they're all here for Maker Faire.
I mean, they call it the world's greatest show and tell, but I think that really undersells what you get out of coming to this event
to share in person.
Yeah, well, and it's on all scales. So it's like the guys who made the Mondo Spider that we saw years ago brought their latest creation, which is like a quadrupedal
prosthesis.
Gorilla
walker. I was surprised you didn't come in on your speech in that.
I understand.
This is that was like 8,000
I don't think I could drive it.
No. He could, they can barely
one person
drive
can
it.
Drive it.
So it was really interesting. The guy, Jonathan Tippett's his name. And
it's a beautiful device.
It's not like a Strombeach linkage system.
No, it looks like it is, but no.
But it's not. Yeah. But four legs, but each leg's controlled by a person's limb, his limb.
Yeah.
So two arms and two legs, and he's still learning to walk in it. but we see every time, like, there's their goal is mech racing and running at 30 kilometers an hour down a sand dune or something. But at Maker Faire, it's not about showing that off. It's about showing the milestone of now I can do a turn.
I can lift one leg.
Yeah.
Like, that was part of it, part of his thing.
There was another guy there in a Strand-based wheelchair.
Yes. Oh, so elegant.
So elegant. Yeah. And he was telling me, he had me sign the first, I think it was the first part that failed on it.
Oh, cool.
And he said he had built it for Burning Man last year, and it had failed just before leaving for Burning Man, so he couldn't bring it. And so he's like, I'm here at Maker Faire learning new ways that it fails.
Yeah.
And it was very smooth, and I kept looking underneath for wheels. No wheels. That is solely on the foot pad.
So many
feet.
That's
so good.
There's a lot of Strandbeasts out there that have wheels as a backup. Not this one.
Yeah.
So, and it's not just the big scale stuff. It's not the stuff that somebody spends 1,000 hours on some enormous project, 200,000 hours on a huge enormous project like the prosthesis. There was a team that 3D prints marble mazes, like little fidget mazes where the marbles just go through.
That.
And they built a bunch of incredible designs. They were in a little booth in one of the big rooms, but they had designed a Sisyphus climber.
Oh.
That used an incredibly clever magnetic armature to kind of like, so okay, it's a screw, like a screw on the outside. Mm-hmm. The marble rides the screw down when it gets to the top.
Yeah.
And then there's a magnet that just rotates around the inside of a cylinder on the inside of the screw that rides it back up to the top of the thing. And they designed it, they'd worked on it enough so that like it's 3D printed. The angle of the slope was right so that the magnet wouldn't catch the ball on the way down.
Right.
But it was obviously strong enough to hold it on the way up.
Wow.
And it's just somebody was like, I want to make this thing. I think it's going to be really cool. And then they spent the time to figure it out. And like they solved, it's a problem that didn't exist. There's no obvious, it's neat. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The entirety of it is that it's neat, and that stuff is incredible.
I got inspired, and I realized also that we go into full production on MythBusters Junior very soon.
Yeah.
And that I realized, I've got to build my Comic-Con costume now.
Oh, right.
Because time is going to get short very quickly. So I made great strides on my Comic-Con build yesterday.
I'm like, Adam, it's May. we've never seen you work on a Comic-Con costume in May
when,
before.
Comic-Con's July?
July. Yeah,
this
2 months.
Is really early.
I'm just making sure I don't get caught out. I also have, before Comic-Con, I'm also heading to do to an artist colony to do some construction of a special project I'm working
cool.
on. And so that too is also something that I have to get up and running. And I might be using photogrammetry of some old data that I gathered in order to make this other project work.
That's cool.
Very cool.
Norm, that's cool.
Anything else you saw that was exceptional?
Well, one of the things I want to point out is that Adam talks about a lot of people coming into town, right? And it's New York is officially the World Maker Fair, but mm-hmm. I met a lot of people who had come from other countries, from mm-hmm. Australia, from England, for Bay Area Maker Fair. And there's like definitely a Silicon Valley vibe to some of the projects there. I never thought of Maker Fair. In my mind, it was never like a Comic-Con or a Dragon-Con. It was always like the event, the hours from 10 to 6, that's the fair. But when we go to a Comic-Con, there's a lot of after parties, stuff, yeah. right? And this is the first year that I heard about a lot of the after stuff that went on. A lot of people like Bill and Laura who met up at restaurants and bars and groups that set up meetups after Maker Fair. And I think it's something that we'd love to see more of.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Because, yeah, the what you see during the fair is awesome, but you're also running around a lot.
Very little time to really engage.
And to meet your fellow people
yeah.
afterward at a shared space close to the fairgrounds, I think is something that like I would love to join more of those next year.
I think that would be cool.
But the coolest thing I saw, the trains. I met some wonderful train
folks. The steam trains?
There are two train groups.
What? Really? I only saw one.
There are the
were these like the trains we saw in...
Yes, which we're not going to talk about.
Oh,
but we did see some trains at one point in the past year. One group, model train builders who make real steam trains
yeah.
that run on Welsh coal, clean yeah. Welsh coal, and not electric.
There's
not electric.
Such thing as clean coal, Norm.
Yeah, I know. The cleanest you could have it. The most sanctioned coal.
Oh, there you go.
The pieces of coal that they use are about this big. They're about a half an inch
but
square.
The engineers are scooping the coal into the burners and explaining how, at that small scale, they have to run, you know, they have to tune their engine, make sure the cooling's there, they self-lubricate, and they run around the track. And because there's no engineer on the train, they have to make sure it all works because if you run a train, you got to change the power for elevation and braking.
That's insane.
They adjust the outflow on the steam. My daughter was fascinated with those. So we sat and watched them for a long time and I got to talk to them. My favorite part about that steam engine setup actually is how they level the track.
Yeah.
So they have an oval that's probably 30 feet long yeah. and 15 or 20 feet wide.
Being perfectly level is
and it has to be perfectly level.
So you have no adjustments needed for
right,
elevation.
So they don't adjust speed and stuff, and they don't crash right coming down the hill. And what they've done is they have four articulated legs that are like the sliding kind of tripody legs mm-hmm. with the friction mounts, but they put round bubble levels on each end of each platform. So they level the first one. Right. And then they level the second one, and they just keep working their way around like they're laying tracks. Yeah. And as long as each individual piece is level after the first one, then when they get to the other side, then it connects.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. They make connected bubble levels for pool tables.
Oh.
Huh.
Like on a bar?
It's water-filled. It's been a long time since I've seen an ad for one, but they're water filled with Tygon tubing in between the pucks that you could probably extend.
Huh.
Because it's meant for making sure the pool table is level across its entire
width.
Well,
so the tables are rigid metal,
right.
And they just have the bubble levels on each end of each segment.
Okay, right.
So it's the same thing, basically.
Levels,
as long as two bubbles are level.
As two edges meet and they're both level, you're good.
I asked him how long it takes them to set up the track, and he's like, well, we used to do it with sawhorses and shims, and that was bad. This still takes a long time, but it's a lot better. So,
and then the second train group, I just fell in love with. This is the European train enthusiasts, the Bay Area Garden Railroad Society. Big shout out to them. They are the ones inside the big expo hall,
mm-hmm.
and they're the ones who build the miniatures, the mm-hmm. electric trains.
Oh, cool. Oh, yeah.
And they have this massive train set made of 28 different segments. Each segment's about like a yard long.
Oh, man.
But they're all modular. So their standard is as long as your grass has the same tone of color and as everyone has the same profile for the end of their segment where it's a little bit elevated in the back and it dips down the front, they can have any arrangement.
And then the track matches?
And they all match. And then the group shares the corners and everyone builds their own segment or
that's
two.
That's exceptional.
That's really
And it
cool.
takes them 2 hours to set the whole thing up. And it's a segment. One of the segments was made 25 years ago and one was made 2 years ago. And they all electronically work.
That's super clever.
And everyone just runs their trains on there.
So inspiring.
Yeah.
Hey, shout out to the R2 and BB-8 Builders Clubs because they are always there in force.
They are.
And the thing that they do is magic. Like if you want to smile a lot, this is the closest I've ever felt to being inside your Chewbacca costume. But if you walk around and follow some people driving R2s,
yeah,
and then like the hit that they get from kids and adults too, but mostly kids. Because
what they want to give you is the experience of engaging with a droid. Yeah. Like what could be when I built the R2, my best friend was like, "Dude, you're making a happiness machine because if R2's in your house, how could you be sad?"
And that's exactly it. Yeah. Like they're little kids and they see him and they're shy at first and they kind of look and then they're like, and then they walk up to him, look at him, and he turns and looks and beeps at them and they're like, "Yeah, exactly. It is
awesome.
It is." The best, and like those people spend thousands of hours building these robots. They take them out, they drive them out into the crowd of people at Maker Faire, and it's got to be scary and exciting and all of the things. But it's one of my favorite things.
So there. Awesome!
It's really good.
I watched Black Panther 3 times this week.
A lot of plane travel.
I was on United going to Florida and back, and so I watched it twice on the way there and once on the way back. Can I tell you that movie gets better every single time you watch it? I cry every time, and man, I can't figure out who's the villain anymore. I agree entirely with Killmonger, except that he's a monster.
Yeah, except for the other than the mass murder problem.
Other than that, you know. It's super awesome to watch that, and that was and we went and saw Raiders last night at the Alamo Draft House. Ooh, yes. With Kishore.
Yes, that saw you in the cave practicing your whip yesterday.
Yes, I did not execute it on stage because it felt like the stage was too small and I didn't want to. I didn't want to screw any. I didn't want to harm stage? Anybody.
You didn't want to hit the screen either.
No, I don't want to hit the screen. Yeah.
That would be frowned upon. Were you in the big theater?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, Theater
nice.
One.
Nice. Kishore has a monthly movie series at the Alamo Draft House in San Francisco. So if you're a Bay Area local, check it out.
First Monday.
Yeah. And
last Monday?
How do I not know this?
It's about science and cinema. So never mind. They do talks. they've done Alien.
No place for science
they've done
in America.
Raiders. And next month, I believe, is Apollo 13.
Apollo 13. I realized, I got to be there. I'll be there.
Yeah, exactly. I'll come for that one. That sounds pretty good.
It was really fun. And Raiders, still a perfect movie.
Oh, I mean, it's just brilliant.
Yeah, totally amazing.
A little bit of subversive move, he said, because he did it on the week that Solo comes out. Which is a subtle reminder that we all have homework this week, because I'm sure we'll be talking about the movie next week.
Can I tell you what I'm nervous about Solo? And I have not watched a single trailer.
Yeah.
I'm nervous about Chewie. I'm nervous.
Yeah, I can see that.
They don't get Chewie, right? Chewie. I bet he lives.
I'm sure.
Look, think he makes it.
Peter Mayhew, what Peter Mayhew did with Chewbacca.
Maybe Chewbacca is Chewbacca too.
What Peter Mayhew did with Chewbacca is super important and super specific, and I'm nervous about the new execution of Chewie.
Did we talk about the puppeted performances a few weeks ago? There was a documentary. Oh God, where was it? I'm gonna have to do some homework and bring this back up next week.
All right,
because there was a real talk about what Andy Serkis does and how there's a direct lineage from Peter Mayhew and Kenny Baker and Anthony Daniels.
Oh, that's a lovely
guys
thing.
In
totally
costumes,
right. Yeah.
Straight through to what Andy Serkis does.
Andy Serkis and Josh Brolin and Infinity.
Exactly, and how that's never been really recognized as a separate like for a long time.
Acting.
The guys in the suits were not given serious performer credit.
Right.
And I mean, I think that's starting to change with what Andy Serkis and Josh Brolin have done.
Terry Notary and
But it's still, they're kind of too.
Yeah, it's still in this nether region of acting.
Yeah.
That's not getting its full due.
Well, you can't see their faces, Adam, so it's not real acting.
I got two more things before we wrap up. Go. One related to puppetry. There's a great video that's being shared around on Twitter last week of an outtake from a Jim Henson production. It's Frank Oz.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Jug Band?
It's Jug Band. Emmett Otter's Jug Band Band.
I haven't watched that yet. Is it great?
The outtake?
The outtake, if you watch it, it's like there are two videos, total of like 3 minutes, but it will make you smile and laugh. It's basically they stay in character while the film crew is trying to get this one gag to work, and they improv.
It's Frank Oz in the Mom Otter, right?
Yes, and it is one of the most delightful things you will ever see.
Awesome.
Ever, even if you don't know the Muppets. And the other thing, a huge shout out, Bill and I were working on a project yesterday actually, and we're making a model kit. And we had some electronics in the model kit. And a lot of times you buy garage kits and you buy a model kit and there'll be some electronics you can buy afterward on eBay because people make aftermarket kits. Mm-hmm. Our board on the kit, we were doing soldering, we're getting the LEDs wired up, the sound, everything, and it wouldn't work. and we're troubleshooting. Oh no, what's going on? And then we realize after like 10 minutes troubleshooting, the board was missing the chip, the controller
chip. The IC chip.
The IC. It was just a port. It was just a port. And I'm like, we're morons.
There's a socket. Oh my God.
There's a socket. You have to solder it on?
It's not in the bag. It was in the bag. So like, what do we do? Oh, this chute is a bust. So we look at the instructions, and the person who made the kit has his contact phone number on there, an email, and says, call me if you have any problems. I'm like, no way. Like, first of all, is this a kit that was made like 10 years ago? No way, right? Like, it wasn't. It was like 2 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
Called up. Just phone called someone. Yeah. Take that in.
Did that
actually work? And they answered the phone?
They answered the phone.
Wow.
I described my problem. They knew exactly the kit I was talking about. That person lives in the South Bay. And I drove down to his house after work to pick up a new IC.
That
he burned that day.
Amazing.
And we tested there. And then I hung out for like half an hour in his garage looking at his scratch builds and his model kits and learned that there's a model kit club that's like half a mile from my house in San Francisco that meets every month.
Oh, there wow. You go. So I know what you're doing next month.
So yeah. I was going to say, this is the other thing about Maker Faires. If you're into something weird and you have a heart, like you don't have the time to go drill down through 3,000 forum posts to figure out how you meet other people who are into this weird thing.
Yeah.
I was talking to some tiny houses people at Maker Faire. And I'm not super into tiny houses, but like it's an interesting topic. And I was like, how did you get into this? Like, well, actually, we came to Maker Faire last year. There were some tiny houses people here. and you like that's the power of getting all of these people in the same place.
Totally.
That's super cool, Norm.
Yeah. I was blown away.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I can't believe that you used this 18th century technology, the telephone, 19th century technology.
Margaret, hook me up to Pennsylvania 65,000.
next week, I think we'll probably be talking about Solo.
I'll have to go see it this weekend.
Or Deadpool. I don't know. We'll choose our poison. Yeah, one of those. They're both supposed to be good.
Did you guys see that on Reddit today, fans of Donald Glover have taken over not the bad the Donald, but the slightly less bad the Donald subreddit and made that the subreddit for the one true Donald?
That Donald Glover is the one
true Donald? The Donald Glover is the one true Donald.
That wow. makes me very happy.
Yeah.
So there we All go. Right. I think that's a great place to
see you guys. But you're going to run the audio for Adam's talk.
If you listen to the audio of the version of the podcast, you will see you'll hear the full sermon after this. And if you watch the video, there's a link below to watch the video.
Awesome.
Well.
Fabulous.
Hey, there's a new episode of The Foo Show out now. It features you guys. It's the three of us in a virtual representation of the shop.
Fabulous.
And check it out on Steam VR and FooVR.com.
Yeah, just go to Steam and type Foo Show. And it'll be right there. It's cool. $5.
Thanks, guys. See
bye. This week's episode is also brought to you by Udemy, the largest marketplace for online learning. Want to expand your potential? With over 65,000 courses starting at just $11.99, Udemy can help you develop your skills and discover new passions. Students around the world have used Udemy to get ahead and even switch careers. Visit ude.my/untitled or download the Udemy app to learn anytime, anywhere. We'll see you next time.
Hello! All right. I can't shake hands with everyone yet. Hello. Hello, Maker Faire! Another big hurrah for Rapid Transit, please. Thank you guys for keeping me warm, and to the Vallejo Mercs who got me here and got me there in the land speeder, 501st. I love you guys. Here's another year. I've been thinking about what I was going to say this morning for weeks. I wrote it down this morning, and I didn't expect it to go where it went, but here we go. My life is centered around the stories that we tell each other. It is centered around the products of our making and the stories that those objects bring with them, as well as the stories they tell. But I have ignored sometimes a key aspect of what happens when we make, and that aspect is generosity. Our making, in and of itself, is a radical and deeply generous human act. When we construct, code, sew, or bake something new into existence, we are no longer passive observers or simple receivers of the realities around us. We declare ourselves participants. We are installing light on a path that others may choose to follow.
Whenever we put something into the world that didn't exist, we're trying to solve a problem that we see. It might simply be how to paint a portrait of a person in front of us, or it might be how to elicit a specific emotion with sound. It might be how to safely pull a shark from the water for tagging with $20 worth of local hardware. It might be how to turn oneself into an approximation of a favorite superhero, or how to bypass a local crumbling infrastructure to ensure the safe distribution of medicine to far-flung and hard-to-serve communities. Every time we make anything, we are identifying a problem, however trivial that it may seem, or local, or personal, and in seeking to solve that problem, and we seek to solve that problem through and with what we make. And any look at history, at all of human history, will center upon the things that we make and the stories we tell about them. When we make things, anything at all, we're asserting that we're part of that history, not simply receivers of it. We become players in the human race. Making is communion with fellow humans. It's community. It's sharing. And whether that's sharing ideas, aesthetics, or engineering, it's an act of sharing with our fellow passengers on this delicate sphere. And it turns out that our parents were right. It is so much better to share your toys. I'm here to defend sharing as a vital aspect of maker culture that is intrinsic to the underlying ethos of what it means to be a maker and, by extension, in my opinion, a human being. Some people don't want to share. I once attended a gallery show where the artist had done some fairly novel executions of portraits using common materials in a way that was really surprising, and I asked them about their process, and they told me they didn't want to share it with me. They wanted to keep the technique a secret. At one point when I was working in a special effects studio, a friend of mine was making these large, round forms using a very specific set of techniques, and he was doing it for a week and a half, and it was fascinating, all the levels that he went through. And I asked him if I could take pictures of the process, and he said yes, but he would withhold key parts of the information from me so that I could not learn how to do this. He considered it part of his job security. For years, the makers of Barbie dolls have shut down, and maybe they still try and do this, they shut down any and all Barbie-themed art shows and artwork. This is a grossly misguided form of copyright and trademark protection. It seems that they imagine somehow that they can dictate how people think about and discuss Barbie through their enforcement. I disagree vehemently with this stance. I view it as antithetical to making as a practice, as a discipline, and to being a member of any community. As a member of a community of humans, art is one of the key ways in which we converse about the world and what is going on around us. Human progress is made not simply because of how we make things, but also because we share what we make and how we made it. The first two examples I gave are examples of people mistaking the techniques that they know for a commodity. The third is based on the specious idea that one can control everything about a brand. And I know that unique processes have a value, and the inventor of those processes should benefit from that value. I believe that too. That's what our patent and copyright acts are built to address. But each of the three examples I gave are about treating something as a scarce commodity when it is not scarce at all. Because sharing defies the laws of physics. The more you give away, the more you have. When Star Wars came out and changed my life, I was 11 years old, and reading the fan magazines at the time, I learned that people built that universe and decided that I wanted to do that too. And 20 years later, in 1998, I got hired up at Industrial Light and Magic. And one day I was making some radar dishes for the movie Space Cowboys. And I'd come up with I had to make a dozen of them. And this was going to be really laborious. These are like open frame radio telescopes, like the one you pass on 280 on the way here. And I came up with this new method of doing it, which was I laser cut out the wireframe, and then under the heat lamp of a vacuum former, I slumped it into a very specific radar dish shape. And my friend Lauren Peterson, who's one of the original Industrial Light and Magic model makers from Star Wars and Empire, came by my desk and he said, "What are you doing? That looks really cool." And then he went and told some of my coworkers about it. And for the rest of the day, everyone filed past my desk to learn this new technique. The institution that was the model shop was imbibing my new execution. and learning it and keeping it in its pocket for future reference. And I wasn't special in this regard at all. This every time a new process was brought in or someone came up with a new way to do something, that procedure was repeated, and the subtle institutionalization of the sharing and knowledge and about building was one of the single best things about working in that model shop. When we over-commodify around the things that we make, we mistakenly assert that we are solely responsible for this thing. Again, I'm not against getting paid for your good work and benefiting from your inventions, but our Congress is right at this second contemplating extending copyright to almost 140 years past the creation. And this is all because Disney doesn't want Mickey Mouse to drift into the public domain. Walt Disney deserved all of the fruits of his labors, but being able to commodify a creation indefinitely and even infinitely is bad for culture and it's bad for the world. It's instructive to go back and read. I'm a little bit of a legal geek, so I advise this. It's instructive to go read the original Copyright and Patent Acts from 1801 and 1802. They're Googleable. They're actually quite readable. But our founding fathers state really clearly in them that a creator should totally benefit from a limited monopoly over the fruits of their labors, but that after a reasonable period, that monopoly over those efforts should expire. This is so that society can benefit from taking that idea, learning from it, tearing it apart, breaking it down, and putting it back together in new and different ways. This is literally how human progress is made. And the point of human progress isn't to make money forever from every useful invention. It's to make the world a better place than we left it. And it's not just to make the world better for our relatives and the people we know and the people that look like us, but for everyone. Working together to solve our common and uncommon problems and share resources is how to do that. Share what you've got and what you've done. And now my sunglasses don't have close-up, so I have to look at this. Let's see. One of my favorite things to do when I'm building something complicated is to make more than one of them. And sometimes that's just because I'm going to screw one up. But usually at the end, I end up with at least two of the thing. And that means I can trade the other one away. And this is this whole new bonus, because not only do I get a new thing, but in the barter exchange, the person I've traded with and I each get a story associated with the things that we've traded. And those stories become part of the lifeblood of my collection and my shop. I believe deeply in open source. Last year, I released my first product, a tool bag that addressed my issues around the idea of a tool bag. And in a few weeks, I'm going to release a bunch more products and a second iteration of this bag, including a brand new design. At the same time, I'm going to release for literally my cost a set of inexpensive patterns for both bags, so that anyone who wants to make one can pay like $15 and make their own. Yeah, I cannot wait to see what people do with this. And I don't think of this as eating into my profit margin. I see it as investing in building and learning from a community interested in solving and benefiting from the same common problems that I have. I get to see executions of my original idea that drift untold distances from anything I could have imagined. The thing about sharing is Paul McCartney is right at the end of Abbey Road. The love you take is equal to the love that you make. I turned 50 last year. My sons are out of the house, making their way in the world, and now I'm 1/5 as old as America. And it feels old when I put it that way, and I'm not superstitious, and I know that it is just a number, but it has altered the way that I see my life moving forward. I now see myself in this new phase in which I'm no longer arriving. I'm now in the process, however long, and I'm hoping for at least 40 more years, I'm in the process of leaving and preparing myself and my things for my departure. I had dinner with one of my oldest friends a few weeks ago, and I told him these thoughts, and just nobody knows me better than him and the three or four people that I was bouncing around New York with in the 80s. And he said, "Oh, buddy, it's totally true. We're all dying and we have to pass everything on." I'm working to archive my collection so that each and every important story about what I've collected is saved. I've brought in full-time help this year into my shop to assist in that process. I've started getting rid of the things that I don't need to hold on to anymore, giving them away, eBay, Craigslist, family and friends. I'm looking at the things I have with a more critical eye. I seek to keep only the objects that I consciously want to be a steward of, and everything else should go to someone who can use it. But mostly, I see it as incumbent on me to share what I have learned constantly and through every medium I get to play in. This is the story I'm telling. So again, I say, let's share what we've got and what we've learned. Let's pay respect to our teachers by being teachers, by passing on what we know and admitting what we don't, by being honest about the wrong roads we went down to get to our destination, the shameful mistakes, as well as the impossible luck. There's another super important way that we can share. We can share our ears. We can listen. We live in a time of real and dangerous social polarization. And those who seek further polarization are the enemies of a healthy culture and a healthy planet. Shutting out the voices of other humans has never been a path to achieve greatness. It is the way we have achieved harm and death and despair. We can start to eliminate that polarization by listening. All anyone seeks from an interpersonal connection is to be seen and to be heard. And we are living in a time when it is more important than ever to listen to those whose experience is outside yours. It's also more possible, and it has never been more important, to hear what their world is like and what kind of problems they're trying to solve, because those problems might be different than yours. But by really engaging in the experience of others, and by others, I specifically and especially mean those at the margins of society and of your experience, you'll see that at the core, we are all still similar. That's the lesson from sharing your ear and letting others share their stories. We all love our kids and our families and our partners and our friends. We all seek to find spots of real grace in the middle of and around the edges of the noisy business of making our way in the world. And we are all here for too brief a time. And yet, together, we can get so much more done. So let's get started. Thank you.